You're with us for the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Busy days at the Capitol, and we're going to walk through the legislation and slow down the politics as we get set for a week when Governor Tony Evers delivers his budget address. That is Thursday evening at 7, and we will be carrying it live right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join in throughout the State Capitol Report at 800-642-1234. Would you benefit from a middle-class tax cut? How? Or do you think the money should be used for something else? Have you been following the lawsuits filed against the lame duck laws? How do you hope to see these suits resolved? Or do you think they shouldn't have been filed in the first place? And what about the governor's push to legalize medical marijuana? Where do you stand? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. Laurel White is WPR State Capitol reporter. Laurel, welcome back.
Thanks, Kate. Thanks for having me.
So let's start out with this middle-class tax cut. Governor Evers imposed his first veto last week, and the Republicans had put forth this tax cut by leveraging a budget surplus. How have Republicans reacted to this veto?
So Republicans haven't been terribly pleased with this veto, of course. This was a bill that they were pretty passionate about, pretty excited about. They said that the governor vetoing this legislation was really an example of him not walking the walk of this bipartisanship that he says he wants to practice in the state capitol. At the same time, though, Republican lawmakers say they're really committed to this middle-class tax cut, and they're committed to finding a bipartisan solution. So we're looking at kind of the path forward for this in terms of where everybody goes after the governor's first veto. And it's pretty interesting because while they're calling for bipartisanship and they're saying they remain committed to it, they've called the, you know, biggest element of the governor's tax cut proposal a non-starter. So finding common ground could be kind of difficult.
Right. So the governor will have his own plan for a tax cut in his budget proposal Thursday. And this plan funds the tax cut in part by capping a current income tax credit for manufacturers. So what is the likelihood that this type of formula for funding would pass the Republican-controlled legislature?
Well, it's really slim. The chances are really slim for that particular funding mechanism to pass, because essentially Republican lawmakers are characterizing that tax change as a tax increase. What it would do is it would roll back a tax credit program that some manufacturers are able to take advantage of. The changes would apply to the highest level of income earners, manufacturers in Wisconsin. They'd no longer be able to claim this tax credit. Lawmakers say, well, that's a tax increase on those individuals. We are never going to vote to support a tax increase. So this is absolutely just a fundamental no for us. So if this proposal is going to go forward and get support of Republican lawmakers, it looks like the governor might have to come up with a different way to pay for his plan.
And Evers campaigned on passing a 10% income tax cut for the middle class. Do you see any signs of compromise at all?
Well, you know, that compromise really is going to come down to, I think, finding a different funding source. The governor's funding source, Republicans have said that's a non-starter because it's a tax increase. The Republicans' funding source, the governor has expressed concern with because it's not a long-term solution. It's just using a pot of state money that's rolling over from the current state budget. So what they're going to have to do is kind of find an option C that's amenable to both parties, it looks like. And as far as I know, there hasn't been any discussion yet of that option C, at least not that we've heard about publicly.
We're getting up to speed with WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White, and you can be a part of the State Capitol Report at 800-642-1234. Are you following the lawsuits filed against the lame duck legislation? How do you hope to see the suits resolved? Or do you think that they shouldn't have been brought in the first place? Do you agree or disagree with legalizing medical marijuana? What about decriminalizing possession of small amounts? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Laurel, let's look at the lame duck lawsuits. Challengers filed another one on Thursday against legislation that was passed in December's extraordinary session. So this is the fourth suit against the lame duck laws. What does this latest suit allege?
So this lawsuit was filed by the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, And it alleges that Republicans violated the U.S. Constitution with their lame duck session, particularly that they violated the Constitution's guarantee clause, which, for those who aren't intimately familiar with the parts of the Constitution, like the guarantee clause, that says that every state has a right to a Republican form of government, which means a perfectly representational form of government. You know, people elect individuals, those individuals represent them, et cetera. The lawsuit contends that the voters of Wisconsin chose Governor Tony Evers to represent them with the knowledge that he would be able to carry out certain tasks, do things like withdraw the state from the federal Affordable Care Act lawsuit, things like that. And the lame duck lawsuit took those powers away from the governor. So essentially the lawsuit argues the lame duck session is taking away the voters' choice of the governor to do those things. It also says that the lame duck session violates the First and 14th Amendments of the U.S. Constitution by interfering with free expression and association.
So does this lawsuit stand out in any way from the other three that have been filed, or are all of them pretty similar?
It does stand out a little bit. So this is the second of two federal lawsuits. The other federal lawsuit is very specifically focused. It looks at voting restrictions that were passed during the lame duck lawsuit. So of the two federal lawsuits, this one's a bit more broad. Then the other two are both state lawsuits. One is focusing on a procedural argument. It says that the state constitution doesn't specifically outline powers for lawmakers to call an extraordinary session. So it says because this power isn't outlined, the entire extraordinary session should be null and void. Then the other state lawsuit filed by a coalition of union groups argues that the extraordinary session violates the state constitution separation of powers argument by taking too much power away from the executive branch and giving too much to the legislative branch. So they're all, you know, they all have shades of familiarity, of course, but I would say this one's pretty unique.
Laurel, the legal process takes time. Can we expect any of these suits to be resolved anytime soon?
You know, these are all pretty early in the process, so it's going to take a while. You know, as we've seen with other lawsuits that we've followed here in Wisconsin, lawsuits that have to do with our voter ID law, for example, or our legislative maps, these cases are heard in a court, arguments are made, then it takes a while for a decision to come down. When that decision comes down, then things are appealed to a higher court, repeat the process over and over, sometimes all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, as we saw with our legislative maps. So this is not likely a process that's going to end anytime soon.
And so does Wisconsin follow the laws during this time? What happens if they're held up in court?
So Wisconsin will follow the laws unless a judge decides and orders otherwise. So we have seen that in the other federal case, the first federal case that was filed on voting restrictions. A judge in the Western District of Wisconsin said that he believes them to be in violation of actually a previous ruling that that he made in 2016. So he said those laws cannot be enforced as this case is pending appeal. So that's called issuing a stay on the laws. And that is something certainly that a judge can do. But if a judge doesn't do that, then the laws stay on the books. They remain the law of the land and are enforceable.
You're with us for the State Capitol Report. WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White is our guide. Last week, Governor Evers announced some previews of his budget, including a path to legalize marijuana and more funding for women's health and infant care. What are your thoughts there? 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute on the Ideas Network. You're with us on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Tony Evers will propose decriminalizing small amounts of marijuana as part of his state budget address that he'll unveil Thursday. And under that proposal he laid out last week, he talked about legalizing marijuana for medical conditions.
I believe, and I know the people of Wisconsin overwhelmingly believe, that people shouldn't be treated like criminals for accessing medicine that can change or maybe even save their lives.
It's one of the items we're tracking as we talk through the legislation and politics. Governor Evers previewed some pieces of his budget last week. So what do you think about his plan for legalizing medical marijuana and decriminalizing possession of small amounts? We're at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White is our guide. Laurel, so as Governor Evers rolled out his plan a bit, or has previewed his plan on the path toward legalizing marijuana and medical marijuana, are these bipartisan issues, or does this create some clash here?
Well, it's a little bit of both, Kate. So some Republicans, including Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, have expressed support for medical marijuana in the past. However, in this particular instance, the Speaker says that this package of proposals goes a little bit too far. He's not incredibly comfortable with some of the other elements of what the governor wants in addition to medical marijuana, those things like decriminalizing small amounts of marijuana in your possession, creating that process for expungement, and taking away some of those state regulations on CBD oil.
Well, let's hear Assembly Speaker Robin Voss reacting to these proposals. Here he is on WISN Radio.
Rather than reaching out and saying, let's figure out how to actually work together, he made the decision to go down the route of saying, this is just a first step toward legalization of marijuana, which for an awful lot of folks in Wisconsin, myself included, that is an absolute positive non-starter.
You didn't mince words there, Laurel. Is that a feeling that it's a non-starter for Republicans here?
Well, anything that they believe, kind of, as you heard the speaker say, puts us on the path toward full legalization of marijuana is going to be a big problem. And that's what the speaker says this package essentially does, in his opinion, that it just goes a little bit too far, that there's not quite enough control and oversight. I believe that when we heard a little bit more from Speaker Voss last week, he said that he thinks medical marijuana at this point, which was the element of the package that he was initially most amenable to, only has a 10% chance of passing the state assembly now because of some of these other things that are attached to it in the package. Now, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, on the other side of the hall in the Capitol, has never been enthusiastic even about the medical marijuana element. He has just said that he doesn't see it having a path forward at all in the state Senate. So it's not looking too good for this package of proposals from the governor.
Did the governor roll this out in a way that Republicans aren't very keen on in terms of how he's presenting his ideas?
Well, I think, something Speaker Voss said about this is that the governor just appears to be, in his opinion, pushing it just a little bit too far. Speaker Voss said that he has himself been open to medical marijuana in the past. Actually, for the past several years, he's expressed an openness to that. So he says that he wished the governor had been a little bit more communicative with him, sort of reached out to somebody on the Republican side that has been open about their support for one of the elements of this package to see if a little bit more coalition building could be done before the package itself was rolled out, maybe get a little bit more feedback on some of those other elements to do something that would be more likely to pass the Republican-controlled legislature. Now, I think we have to keep in mind, as that pushback is coming from Republican leadership, that this budget document really is sort of a philosophical document on the part of the governor. This is outlining his goals, his priorities, and so him kind of rolling back what he's asking for might be a contradiction to this sort of mission statement that he's laying out for the state, not fully exploring everything that he really wants.
Well, let's bring in Mary now, joining us from Pewaukee on this issue. Hi, Mary.
Good morning, both of you. Hi, Laurel and Kate. I wanted to just say that I am in agreement with Evers. One is the CBD oil is legal, I think, in all of the states, and that it may have some help for people with pain, such as arthritis, et cetera. The second thing is the medical marijuana. I think all points are directing us to realize that this is, almost a miracle type of a natural herb that can be used for things from seizure to pain, et cetera. And I think we definitely have to have that. I mean, it makes no sense to have it in the same category as heroin, cocaine, and the other harsh drugs that actually are detrimental to our society.
So Mary is saying, Laurel, that we really need to lean on the latest research on medical marijuana specifically.
Mm-hmm. And that is something that the supporters of this legislation have consistently voiced during the debate on this. And I think it's also interesting to point out that, you know, she was talking about public support for these proposals. Public support we've seen in polling from, you know, the poll that we often point to is the Marquette University Law School poll. And it has showed consistently increasing support for medical marijuana in Wisconsin over the past several years. I believe right now it's north of 70% of public support for that measure. So that's something that the governor has mentioned already as he's rolled out this proposal, and I think that'll certainly continue to be a part of the debate going forward.
Well, Governor Evers' first budget address this week, among the things he'll propose, $28 million for women's health care, including funding Planned Parenthood. Here is Assembly Speaker Robin Voss reacting to that.
Republicans are not going to put one more nickel into Planned Parenthood than we do right now. We have done everything we can to try to make sure that we protect human life.
So what do we know about this legislation and this funding of $28 million? What does he want to do here?
So this funding, it's a little bit complicated, but basically what happened here is that Governor Scott Walker shut down two federal streams of funding known as Title V and Title X that were directed toward Planned Parenthood in Wisconsin. Planned Parenthood said that shutting down that funding resulted in them closing five rural clinics across the state, and just, you know, limiting the amount of care that they were able to provide. In terms of preventive care, you know, things like screenings, testing, well woman checks, et cetera. So what the governor would do in his proposal is reopen those streams of Title V and Title X funding to Planned Parenthood in Wisconsin. I spoke to the head of Planned Parenthood here in the state, and she said that that money would exclusively be used for things like preventive care. But as we heard from Speaker Voss, Republicans have major concerns with sending money to Planned Parenthood in any form because of Planned Parenthood's role in performing abortions in Wisconsin.
So how else would this funding for women's health be used with Planned Parenthood not in the picture? What else happens in this proposal?
So there's definitely money that's not being funneled to Planned Parenthood that doesn't have to do with those two streams of money. It would also increase state money given to a minority health grant program, which is working to decrease the high infant mortality rate for African-American babies in Wisconsin. This is something that we've reported on a lot at WPR. The rate of infant deaths for Black babies in Wisconsin, according to the CDC, is nearly three times that of white babies. So the governor says we need to put more state resources into identifying the causes of this problem to do more preventative work. So he would give a lot more money to state programs that help address that. It would actually create a new infant mortality prevention program within the State Department of Health Services. So that would be a new initiative. And the governor's proposal also does a number of things related to Medicaid. So it would increase Medicaid coverage for doula services. Doulas are individuals that provide guidance to moms-to-be and new mothers. And also it would seek a waiver to increase postpartum care for individuals who are on Medicaid. So right now, postpartum care is limited to a specific number of weeks. Under the governor's proposal, that would be significantly increased. So individuals on Medicaid would have more access after they give birth.
Well, very quickly, as we start to wrap up here, Assembly Republicans have unveiled a nearly $4 million package to address homelessness. And here's Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinke talking about the package on WBAY-TV.
We're investing in resources to help avoid evictions, to get people so they don't become homeless. Then we're investing in more money into shelters, you know, and to help expand resources for them as well.
So it sounds like there's a doubling down here on funding for housing programs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And this is something that we've seen state lawmakers work on pretty consistently over the past several years. There was also a package of homelessness-related legislation that passed during the last legislative session. So this is kind of building on that. identifying more things, more areas that need additional state resources, and kind of taking another step down that road to help this population.
How have the governor and Democratic lawmakers responded to this proposal?
So Democrats were actually a little bit frustrated that they weren't more involved in the rollout of this proposal because they have been supportive. They've been part of a task force that identified some steps that needed to be taken by the state. So there was a little bit more concern about how much bipartisanship is happening in the Capitol. That's a theme that we're hearing a lot about these days.
Well, Laurel, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is WPR State Capitol reporter. Up next, it's news. And the State Capitol Report continues with a look at what we can expect from a new state task force on caregiving. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Here with us for the State Capitol Report on the morning show, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Evers signed an executive order last week establishing a governor's task force on caregiving. And the group is supposed to address worker shortages and develop support services for families to improve caregiving quality. So what are your hopes for a statewide task force on caregiving? What aspects of caregiving need to be addressed first? And do you serve as a caregiver in some form? How has that role affected other parts of your life? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Lisa Pugh is executive director of the ARC Wisconsin, which supports people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. She's also co-chair of the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance. Lisa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
And we have Lynn Gall with us. She is the Family Caregiver Program Coordinator at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services Office on Aging. She also co-chairs the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance. Lynn, welcome to you.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start with your reaction, Lynn, to this call to establish a caregiving task force here in Wisconsin. What do you make of it?
Well, it was a very welcome surprise. We've been talking about this. Lisa and myself and other members of our alliance have been looking at this issue for quite some time, knowing that it's an issue that affects everyone. Caregiving is a pretty universal concern. We've either been a caregiver, will be a caregiver, or know someone who was, and will likely be the recipient of care ourselves. So knowing that our population has been shifting and getting a little bit older, it's really been an issue that's been on our radar at the State Office on Aging, and it was wonderful to hear this.
Lisa, how would you describe the state of caregiving right now in Wisconsin?
I think we've definitely reached a crisis level, and that's why this discussion is so important, because we are very soon, within the next 6 years, going to be at a state where we do not have enough workers to meet the need. In fact, I think a lot of people would already say that is the case. I do a lot of traveling in my work, meeting families of people with disabilities. Those folks can't find care now, and a lot of 80% of persons with disabilities live at home with their family members, and a lot of those folks are elderly themselves. So that's really reaching a crisis level in caregiving across the state.
Lisa, oftentimes we think of caregivers and we think of skilled nursing facilities, we think of assisted living communities. Who falls under this category of caregiver?
So I think there is a very broad definition of who is a caregiver. There is a paid workforce of folks who work in those facilities that you mentioned, and there's a significant vacancy rate, about a 20% vacancy rate in those types of facilities. So they're already having great difficulty finding and keeping workers. And then when you think about family caregivers, where that's where a majority of people with disabilities live and where there's a majority of caregiving for older adults, those folks are also experiencing difficulty either finding paid support or getting respite care and other supports themselves. So a family caregiver can be anybody who's providing care, help with somebody with meals, help with dressing, bathing, help with medications, getting to doctor's appointments. That's the type of family caregiving that we really see across the state.
When we were reading about this executive order, this new task force is charged with with analyzing strategies to attract and retain a strong direct care workforce. We've been talking about workforce issues, finding strategies to support families providing caregiving, and improving the quality of caregiving overall here. So, Lynn, are these the right goals to prioritize?
Yes, I think they are. You know, today we're about halfway through what the projected age shift that we're looking at as baby boomers are aging, and it's going to continue for the next 20 years or so. And so really needing to address those issues, what we're seeing now, as Lisa was saying, we have a shortage of people in facilities, and there are some programs that the state of Wisconsin has started, the Wisconsin WISC Caregiver Careers Program, to try to help bolster and track people to take jobs in, say, nursing homes and other facilities. But what's missing in that is we haven't really had that same recruitment and interest in developing the in-home care supports. And we really do need that. As you go around the programs that I run from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, the National Family Caregiver Support Program and the Alzheimer's Family Caregiver Support Program, great programs, and I highly encourage people to participate in them. But one of the things we are seeing more and more often is that even though the programs may be there to help hire someone to come into your home and help, if there isn't the workforce out there, if there isn't a respite provider or a in-home care provider to hire, it doesn't really matter if there are my programs are there to help, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I think that this task force is going to be able to do, is to kind of ensure that both parts of the system, the paid caregivers and the family caregivers, the unpaid caregivers, that they're working together to make a system that works for everyone.
We're talking about a caregiving task force proposed by Governor Tony Evers. Lynn Gall and Lisa Pugh are the co-chairs of the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance. You can join in. What aspects of caregiving do you think need to be addressed first? Do you currently serve as a caregiver in some form? And how has that role affected other parts of your life? Join in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. So as we look at the staffing issues, the workforce issues, and we've learned it's getting harder and harder to staff and keep caregivers in these jobs. Lynn, what can we do to address the staffing issues?
Well, I mean, one of the primary things that we hear is that it has to be a profession that people want to go into. When any person is deciding what do they want to do with their lives and the direction of their profession, is they have to say, is this going to be something that I can do and support myself? And the wages that are paid to direct care workers are very low, some of the lowest of all the jobs that are out there. So how do you get young people or other people, even people who are looking for second work, you know, something to do in addition to their primary job, how do you get them to say, this is going to be a job I can do that my projected future earnings are going to be able to support myself? And I think that's one of the things the facilities and other places are competing with, you know, people who are working at fast food restaurants, other places down the street that they may be paying more. And this is, you know, difficult work. There's the level of somewhat of skilled nursing involved in some cases, and certainly in the home. Family caregivers, they have to do some of this. I mean, people are coming home from the hospital these days a lot quicker than they used to, and come home oftentimes with really conditions that they need some level of skill to take care of at home. So I think really making it a profession that's attractive, that people can go into and know that they can support themselves and their families, is key.
Lisa, what kind of proposal might be able to move the needle on compensation and make an impact?
Well, that's what we hope comes out of the caregiver task force, by having, you know, bipartisan legislators and family members and caregivers that we can talk about those sorts of solutions. Because as Lynn mentioned, part of it is that low wage. We have to figure out how to increase the wages. We need training and respect for the profession, a career path for these workers. And then also, I think they need health care benefits. About a third of the workers, as far as the data tells us, are below the federal poverty line. a lot of those folks can't afford health care. And so one of the proposals we've been talking about is a Medicaid buy-in where workers would be able to pay a premium if they're proving that they're working in the caregiver workforce so that they can actually have access to affordable health care. I think all of those, this is going to be a multi-pronged solution to a very complex statewide problem. Wisconsin's not the only state that's experiencing this crisis. As we all get, as baby boomers age into the era of needing care, and there's fewer people in that, you know, 18 to 60 workforce range, there's fewer people to provide care and more people who need care. How can we address these issues? And some of it has to do with technology, too. How can we better use technology to provide basic supports in certain circumstances for people? How can we be attracting different types of folks into the workforce? So I think we'll come out with a lot of solutions through this task force, and we hope that they can be prioritized and expedited, and that there'll be some funding behind them, too.
Let's bring in Nancy now in Glendale with thoughts on this. Nancy, hi.
Hi. Yes, I was calling. I've been a caregiver for the last 18 years, first for my dad and then now my mom. And during that time, I also had children of my own, so I've joined like the sandwich generation. And I guess mine's a question and a comment. I knew from like professional experience that I had kind of what was out there in terms of supports for my folks. And even then, it was really hard emotionally to go there and ask for help when we needed it. And also, it was still overwhelming and somewhat confusing at times to access supports that are out there. So I'm just wondering, I had a lot of things going for me, I guess, with time. You know, I had medical leave and things like that I could access to. So I had wages while I'm looking for supports. But what about the folks who don't have, maybe English isn't their first language, or they really don't have time, paid time off to even look for help, I guess. Will the task force be looking at some of those folks and how best to help them?
Yeah, Lisa, go ahead. Nancy is in the sandwich generation.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think this is definitely an issue that we need to address. And Lynn and I, through our work on the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance, we actually have five different work groups that are looking at many of these different issues. And one of them is underserved families, underserved caregivers. And how can we do a better job reaching these populations? One of the ideas that we hope will come forward in the task force is this idea of a family navigator. Part of the reason why our alliance was actually formed in the first place was a discussion where we heard from a panel of folks from the tribes and different other underserved populations in Wisconsin, and they talked about having someone, a peer caregiver, walk alongside them that could really be helpful in helping them find resources. So that's one of the solutions we hope we will see.
Lisa Pugh and Lynn Gall stay with us as we talk about a task force on caregiving. Your thoughts as well, 800-642-1234. We'll get back to the conversation in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're talking about how Governor Evers has commissioned a task force to better support family caregiving. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to AARP, there are 578,000 family caregivers here in Wisconsin, spending an average of $7,000 each year. And we learned last week that a bipartisan group of state lawmakers is introducing a plan that would give family members a tax break to offset some out-of-pocket costs of caring for a loved one. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Lynn Gall and Lisa Pugh stay with us. They're co-chairs of the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance. Let's go to Mary now, joining us from New London. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I was really excited to hear about the establishment of the task force, and it's going to directly benefit, the results of this task force will directly benefit our family. My husband and I are raising a son. He's 21 years old. He has an intellectual disability, and he wants what every other 21-year-old wants. He wants to move away from home. He wants to have a job in the community. He wants to socialize with his friends away from mom and dad. Right now, we consider ourselves pretty lucky because we have
Oh, and Mary, it looks like we lost you there for a moment, but are you still there, Mary?
I am. I'm back.
Okay, great. Can you finish up there?
Yeah, so my son wants to live independently. He wants to work in the community and have a robust social life, and mom and dad shouldn't be doing that. We're lucky to have some paid support workers, but only for 13 hours a week right now. And if he's going to move out on his own, he's going to need 24/7 care. And where we're going to find that in New London, I have no idea.
Let's let Lisa respond.
Right,
yeah, Lisa, go ahead.
I meet so many parents just like Mary all across the state. As I said earlier, 60% of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities in Wisconsin live with family members, and about a quarter of those parents are already over age 60. So they're really reaching this crisis level discussion of what happens when I can no longer provide the care. And I think that's why, like Mary says, this task force discussion is so timely, because how are we going to have enough paid workers in order to meet this need? How can we make sure that Mary and her family have the supports that she needs, and how can we support her son? These are very complicated questions. One of the things that we're focusing on in our alliance is this idea of future planning. The ARC of the United States leads has some evidence-based programming around future planning, which really helps families like Mary's think about what are some small steps they can take now, how can they get connected to community resources so that they're planning for a sustainable future for their son. But I think, again, the task force really needs to tackle some of these other very complicated issues so that we don't have families like Mary's going into crisis.
Lynn, we already know some about who's going to be on this task force. The executive order calls for members of the legislature, someone receiving caregiving services, and someone providing them, among others. It also says other individuals as the governor shall appoint. So who would you like to see brought to the table here?
Well, as a state employee, I have to say that's really not up to me to say, but I have to say that, you know, with the populations we know that are going to be affected by the changes that this task force is putting forward, I would have to say someone with a knowledge of dementia and what that means to the changes that's happening in the state. Right now, the population projected for people with dementia who are living in Wisconsin households is going to double between now and 2040. This age shift that I talked about briefly earlier is, we're about halfway through it right now, and so it's, you know, as we go forward, we need to figure out, we know we're going to have older people. It's great that we're living longer. It's great that we've had, you know, changes in our public health and things that are allowing us to live longer, but that also means that some of the limitations that come with living longer also are going to be more prevalent. And so the responsible thing, I think, is to plan for those things. In the State Office on Aging, we've been watching those numbers very closely and tracking them, and, you know, we know that this is coming. So, and that not only is it coming, it's already here. So what are we going to do to make sure that the families are supported? I think the supports for the family caregivers at home, their needs need to be heard, because they're the ones who are, you know, unlike generations past, people aren't, there isn't somebody at home to do this. Most people are working, more women in the workforce, and so you have, as one of the previous callers said, they're the sandwich generation. They're caring for their own kids. They're caring for, you know, their spouse may have a disability or some sort of limitation, and then they have their parents. So really understanding how that affects themselves, trying to hold a job, and then how that affects employers, too, who are struggling to keep their workforce.
Well, let's bring in another voice to the conversation, Marie, joining us from Edgerton. Good morning, Marie.
Good morning. I'll take my answer off the air. I'll give you a quick scenario. My husband was in the Veterans Hospital, and I noticed that a lot of the interns coming from UW-Madison were like stumbling over him because there were so many of them. But now my husband's in a nursing home, and there is such a lack of CNAs in there and nurses. Wouldn't it be kind of, because I work a lot, so I can't be there for him every day because I was becoming part of his caregiving at the nursing home. And I would like to know if it's possible to get a lot of these interns kind of spreading out and knowing what it's like to work with other patients and residents in these nursing homes that are all over Wisconsin, which have a very, very, I mean, they're so overworked and underpaid.
Well,
I would like to.
Yeah, let's pose that idea to you, Lisa. What do you see there?
So Lynn mentioned that the state has tested over the last year a caregiver careers program that worked with the technical colleges to try to provide bonuses and free tuition to get more people into the CNA programs through our technical colleges. I think it's too early to say whether or not that's been a success, but it was one kind of effort to drive additional training, drive more people into that field, and provide some bonuses for longevity because there are such high turnover rates. So I think we need to get creative about the strategies that get people into those positions, into the appropriate training, and to make sure that they are not only able to serve people in facilities, but also that they're trained in supporting people in the community as well.
So, Lisa, how would you like to see success measured here in this task force? What would that look like to you?
Well, I think to the earlier question about membership, I think that the membership of the task force really needs to represent the need across the state. We need underserved families and caregivers represented. We need representatives for older adults and folks with Alzheimer's and people with disabilities and their family members, as well as professionals and agencies who hire direct care workers and people who do the work themselves. So I think that's where we're going to get the best solutions. I do think that we need to pay attention also to what's happening at the federal level as they're talking about paid family leave. We need an inclusive definition of what that is. There's many siblings providing care for people, spouses. It's not just parents of young children, but that's part of the equation. We need to take an age span approach. So I think the private sector can be involved. Government can be involved in paid family leave policies. And I think just recognizing that this is an extremely important profession that's essential to our economy, really. And so how can we think about this as something that's about the health of the state?
And Lynn, as we wrap up, what do you want to leave with caregivers right now? What can you tell them?
Well, one of the things that I think that every caregiver should remember is that they're not alone, and that what we would like to do as part of this effort is to really reach out to them and ask them to become more involved, to let us know what it is that they need in their lives, how is caregiving affect them, because this task force really needs to know that information and what sort of supports and help do they need in their lives, because that will help shape some of these policies going forward. So their involvement and willingness to talk about it and not be, as one of the callers said, you know, it's sometimes it's difficult to stand up and say, I need help.
And Lynn, we have to go now, but thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And Lisa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the conversation.
Lisa Pugh is Executive Director of the ARC of Wisconsin. Lynn Gall is the Family Caregiver Program Coordinator at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services Office on Aging. They co-chair the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance. And you hear this conversation right here on the Ideas Network.